Oh, you made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half-Cocked Tales, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to shared rules, norms, and respect, we're not even obligated to consider your opinion any longer, because the social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan, the Worship of Dionysus Man, sipping on some science today. I'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here having a good time. We hope you do too. Stay tuned until the end of the show. We're going to be discussing a talking squirrel, and you won't believe its favorite phrase. And as always, I am joined by some fine and fascinating guests in the lounge with me today. Ron, the geologist apologist. Ron, how's your week going so far?
So far, so good. Excelente, señor.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Also with us today is Amber, my sister who loves the woo-woo and thinks she's always right, too. Amber, how is your week going in, I believe, what you described as Satan's armpit?
Yes. Well, we're only a few hours into the week, so there's still time.
There's still time.
It can be salvaged.
Reminds me of an American dad joke in a play that, where they're doing a fake play. And it's like, oh, curse this heat. The devil farted thick today. We got a really fun and informative show brought to you by Pizza the Hut, where pizza sends out for you. We're going to take a quick look back at the year 924 and the coronation of King Athelstan. We got some hot science news. A simulated NASA Mars mission just wrapped up. We're going to be talking about that. We've got a story about ants, fire ants, that perform surgery. Really excited about that one. Yeah. Wait till we get there. It's great. And then, of course, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about the ever-shrinking Alaska. Some bummer news on that one. We've got some bullshit and snake oil involving the fake Chinese police or the Chinese fake police. I don't know. They're both semi-accurate. We'll get there. We're going to play a rousing rendition of Fact-Checking Time involving water, the nation of Japan, and Jeffrey Epstein. Going to be a good one. Of course, we'll wrap things up with a feel-good story about gratitude and the art of living longer. We do encourage everyone to reach out to us at halfcockedtales@gmail.com. Maybe you want to send us a text or voice message to the number 443-499-8253. You can even drop a comment over on TikTok or Facebook or Instagram. We're found on all those places. But for now, I think it's time to start that time machine.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yester in a time machine.
All right, let's fire up the engine, step back in time to the 924. It's just so weird to say it that way. The year 924, if I just say the 924 coronation of King Athelstan. Old King Athel.
There you go.
He's weird. Representing the 914. What was that date again?
924, July 17th.
924. It's the area code. He's repping.
Yeah. Yeah. Athelstan. Athelstan.
How about just King Athelstan?
Is that anywhere near Kazakhstan?
So, back in time to 9th century Great Britain, very tumultuous period. England was basically a set of Anglo-Saxon kingdoms all fighting each other and getting raided by Vikings, sometimes full-on invasions by Vikings.
It wasn't an unpleasant time.
There was a thing they called the Great Heathen Army, which was just a coalition of Vikings. They landed in East Anglia in the year 18. In the year 865, and they just started conquesting and plundering. Plenty of the Anglo-Saxon kingdoms fell to them. And amidst all that chaos, a figure emerges named Alfred the Great, King of Wessex, who kicked some Viking ass, right? He had a huge victory at the Battle of Edington in 878 and negotiated the Treaty of Wedmore, which established an area in northern England under Viking controls. Basically, he was like, all right, we'll give you this little slice. I believe it would be Scotland today, or maybe it was North England. I didn't check the boundary. That's right. I don't go into every single detail. I don't have the time.
Slacker.
Yeah, I know, right? Alfred the Great had a lot of reforms. He's known for military organization, education, his legal systems, and he really laid the groundwork for a unified... But he died, and his son, Edward the Elder, got on the throne, and he continued a lot of those policies and waged a series of wars to reclaim territory that the Danes had taken. So took him about 20 years. He subdued the Danish territories, extended his influence over some of the other Anglo-Saxon kingdoms, and consolidated his power, setting the stage for the next king, Æthelstan, the son of Edward and his first wife, Ecgwyn. You know, some of these medieval names. E-C-G-W-Y-N-N.
Eggwin, that Welsh?
Egwin? Awen? I don't know. I think Game of Thrones just takes medieval English names and gives them phonetic pronunciation. So Æthelstan, grandson of Alfred the Great, getting educated as a prince, right? Military training, governance. However, his dad, Edward the Elder, had a bunch of different wives and kids. And as we learned from watching Game of Thrones, that leads to competition amongst the offspring to see who gets to actually be daddy's true heir.
Me.
I don't think Æthelstan had a lot of expectation of being Edward's heir because they kind of shipped him off to one of the other Anglo-Saxon kingdoms, Mercia or Mercia, however you pronounce that C. I don't know. It's all changing. When Edward the Elder died in 924, there was a succession crisis because Æthelstan had a half-brother, Edward's second wife, who was, it should be noted, Æthelstan's mom. We don't know if she was a noblewoman. We don't know if she was a prostitute. We don't know if she was the lady selling fish in the market. We don't know. We know her name and the fact that she wasn't around very long and disappeared. Edward had a second wife who was a noble, and their son, Aelfwerd, probably a weird way of spelling and pronouncing Alfred, Alfweird, also he claimed the throne when Edward the Elder died. So there's a lot of gaps in British history, which is surprising because, you know, they had the written word. But there's a lot of things that, like, we just don't know. Like, historians guess, and or that our best accounts that we have are embellished at best, fabricated at worst.
Right.
So we don't know much about Æthelstan's mom. We know that there was this, when the dad died, there's this succession crisis. And I would say, like, within 2 to 2.5 weeks, Aelfwerd dies, and we don't know how. This is maddening, because I was like, oh, this is like making a great story. I'm like, I really want to know how this brother died.
But no.
I did find a deep dive into it, and I'll have the episode, the link in the episode description. It's over on medium.com. Somebody who's done a lot of entertaining research throughout, all provides a lot of good context and backdrop, but we just don't know what happened. It could be possible Æthelstan had Edwin had his brothers killed, had his dad killed. I mean, the data just isn't there,
right?
But we do know that Aelfwerd is not the one that lived, and it was Æthelstan. Yay. Good old King Æthelstan. So he's the one who gets crowned king, and man, he's very famous because he continued his grandfather's work and started consolidating power right away. For one of his first acts was to marry his half sister to a Viking king,
As you do.
Get the Vikings on his side. This is, plays out just like Game of Thrones.
Time to get married.
Right? So get this. He marries his half-sister off to this Viking king in Northumbria. And when that king died a few years later, he just annexed him. Northumbria. He's just like, okay, no. Your king's dead. Your queen is my half-sister, so it's mine now. Mine. Very Game of Thrones. Aethelstan was known for his diplomacy. I mean, well, just as much as marrying the sister as taking the land. He did a lot of alliances through marriage. He fostered relationships with the European courts. I guess he had plenty of sisters. And I got to tell you, Amber, I would marry you off in a heartbeat if I thought it would advance my causes.
How much can I get? Let the auction begin.
I might have something to say about that,
I don't think
not
so.
Not back then.
I mean,
I don't think so.
I mean, I still have something to say about it. Nobody would listen to me, but I would definitely have things to say.
Look, there is a minor house in Italy. I really want their support. They've got a son. He's only 16. Deal with it.
Well,
could you imagine a grown woman being married off to a teenage kid?
16's a bit young, but the Italian is a little intriguing.
But you'll go to Italy?
Could be worse.
Could be worse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So God. He married sisters off. Otto of Germany, Charles of France, Charles the Simple of France. They really helped him secure a lot of support against external threats. Very wisely, if you're allies with another country, they don't usually attack you.
Usually.
There was a guy named Hakon the Good, also known as Hakon Haraldsson. He was the youngest son of Harald Fairhair, the first king of Norway. He was sent to England to be fostered by King Aethelstan as a young boy. Which, as we know, is a common practice among nobility to help secure alliances. Part of it would be like, well, I'll send you one of my kids and you raise him as one of yours.
Okay.
Which is a very early example of DEI. I'm not even kidding. This is the exact concept. Like, we've known diverse ideas and opinions are good.
Right.
And genes.
Oh, and genes. Yes.
Oh, well, critical. Definitely. Yeah. Diverse genetics definitely. Definitely a good thing.
You know, Ron, I've never thought of it this way, but it's like, all right, if I give you my kid to raise, then the kid can fuck his sister, but it's not really a sister, so it'll be okay.
Right. Loophole.
Nobility loophole.
The loop glory hole.
I've been rewatching Game of Thrones, so you know it's
nice,
all in my head.
Nice.
So by all accounts, Aethelstan took great care of Hakon. He treated him as his own son, got him educated. And when Hakon returned to Norway, Aethelstan supported his claim to the throne after his dad died. And Hakon was known for his efforts to Christianize Norway and his fair role.
Oh, how nice of him.
Earning the nickname Hakon the Good. He learned that Christianity from Aethelstan, his court.
He learned well.
Not my favorite aspect of Aethelstan, but, you know, I gotta figure it was a lot easier to be religious in medieval times.
Yeah, almost a requirement for civil society.
Yeah, let's just say it's kind of like the only choice they had.
Yeah. One of Aethelstan's most big and significant military achievements was the Battle of Brunanburh in 937, when a coalition of Scots, Norse, Gaels, and Britons from Strathclyde challenged his supremacy. It was known as a brutal and decisive confrontation. Aethelstan and his half-brother Edmund led their forces to a resounding victory. The Anglo-Saxon Chronicle commemorated the battle in a poetic and triumphant tone, emphasizing its importance in securing Aethelstan's rule over the unified England. It was so significant. It was, in the poem, the significance described by them, that it was one of the most ferocious battles that Aethelstan was a part of. Stupid thing repeated itself. Anyway. further anecdotes. He presented Alan II, the Duke of Brittany, with a very decorated sword to symbolize their alliance and express his support for Alan's claim to the Duchy of Brittany. He's just all over the place. And I mean, minting coins. He reformed the coin system, introduced new coin designs with his own image. They bore inscriptions
naturally
and stuff. Naturally. Well, why wouldn't you? He founded Beverley Minster, in East Yorkshire, named after a local saint there. Back to the religious stuff. He was known to be a devout Christian, and so he founded a bunch of churches and monasteries all over England. But at the same time, in this era, that's where learning happened.
The only place it happened, yeah.
Right? If you wanted to have scholars and stuff, more churches and monasteries is how it happened. Interesting that the church had a stranglehold on education for so long.
So strange.
Like it's trying to do today.
It's like a surprise.
No way.
Wait, religion in schools?
That could never happen here.
Yeah. I wonder if there's ever been a reason why we don't want that to happen.
Nothing can go wrong with that.
Never. I mean, it's religion after all. Love and light, right?
Right? Mm-hmm. So he had tons of manuscripts written during his reign, a lot of schools and education going on. One popular story about him was supposedly he visited Old Minster in Winchester, which I believe is an abbey. And during the visit, a great miracle occurred. A paralyzed man was brought to the church and after praying was miraculously cured. And people said it was a sign of divine favor towards Aethelstan and his dedication to the faith.
Oh, blessed be.
Blessed be Aethelstan. So he's known as the king of the English. When, he conquered the Danes. He took the Viking, the Northumbria from the Vikings. He was the first English king to achieve that lordship over Northern Britain. Known as like the first king, right? Bringing it all together, and like they are today, without disagreements or squabbles, certainly united.
Right? The old school king of kings,
the king of kings, and then he died in the year 939, so 17 years.
Wow,
that's it. Not so divine.
Yeah that didn't
right?
last long.
I mean, you could have done better if you're that divine. Come on, do better.
Frankly, I plan on living forever. Thanks to denial, I'm pretty sure it's going to happen.
It might. You have to let me know how that goes.
He got buried at Winchester, but he chose not to honor the city associated with the opposition to his rule. His family was buried at Winchester. But he was like, that city didn't like me, so they can go
fuck them.
He got buried at Malmesbury Abbey in Wiltshire, where he had his cousins buried. No other member of the West Saxon royal family was buried there. But Aethelstan was like, nope, that's where I want to be buried because I don't like the city where all my family's buried.
Every family has one. Gotta be different.
They do. Going out of the zone.
After he died, some people were like, we want Viking King Olaf of Dublin as our king.
Yay!
Right? And his half-brothers, Edmund and Eadred, both tried their hand and spent their time largely devoted to trying to regain control from Olaf, who seized the Midlands, but few years after that, he died, and one of the half-brothers took him back, and the fighting continued. But he was the first guy to, like, pull it off, unify it, hold it together, and then, boom, England.
England.
The rest is, as they say, history.
The rest is history.
England was born.
Oh, look at how cute it is.
Yeah, right. It certainly won't enslave half the world.
Never.
No. Come on. They're just trying to find a place for freedom.
They're bringing civilization to the world.
They just respect everybody's resources so much, they wish to make them theirs to better respect them.
I mean, which, of course, that's how it goes, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll take care of it better than you can.
All right. Everybody back in the time machine. We got to get back to a better time when the succession of power wasn't in doubt.
The good old days.
When religion had absolutely no place in the schools, right?
No sway.
Yeah, we got to get back to a time when religion isn't running the schools.
Or the country. Oh, wait.
Does anything ever change? That's what I want to know.
No, it really
same
doesn't.
As it ever
it's
was.
Just a big cycle, and yet we all think we're original.
Yeah, right. I, for one, completely original. There's never been anybody like me on the earth.
And we pray there will never be again.
That actually is pretty true.
You flatter me both, but I am not that arrogant. I've met me before. I didn't like him very much, but I've met me. Handsome
too
bastard,
funny.
Though. All right, let's.
It runs in the family.
Let's move on. Let's talk about some science news.
It's time for some news from our point of view. If we could have a laugh or two, it's time for some news.
It's time for some news. First off, up in the list, I want to talk about the crew of NASA's simulated Mars mission just finished their year-long isolation.
Ooh.
They spent a year, 378 days confined in a 17,000 square feet simulation area designed to simulate being in a capsule pod on Mars.
Did they go stark raving mad?
Yeah, how'd that go for them?
Well, Kelly Haston was the commander of the mission. She walked out and she said, "Hello."
So anticlimactic. They,
profound.
They appear to have not gone full Game of Thrones. They're still civilized.
Everyone has all their appendages.
Yeah, right. No, yeah,
always
yeah,
a good
nobody
thing.
Ate, yeah, they didn't have to eat anybody to survive. They said it's wonderful to be able to say hello, that it went by way quicker than they thought. They had a strict limited diet. Working through the idea being to work through the challenges a real crew would be expected to have, including not only limited resources, but they included delays in a communication of up to 22 minutes.
Full 22 minutes.
Talking to home, they would say something, and then they'd have to wait 22 minutes before the outside they'd hear the response.
That could take some getting used to. That's for sure.
It's almost like the olden days when you would leave a message on somebody's, you know, voice message machine and wait for them to get home and push the button and listen to it and talk back.
Yeah. I think it's hard enough on the podcast recordings when there's a delay with somebody's internet and they start talking about 5 seconds after they really started talking, and I've already started talking.
Yeah, 22 minutes. That's funny.
There's a really great show on Amazon Prime Video called Avenue 5, where there are space crews that gets knocked off course. And so instead of being like 6 weeks, it's like, oh, now it's 6 months, and then like they try and and they try and save that, and then like now it's 3 years. Like, oh shit!
Oh,
and,
like
everything they do makes it worse. But that's one of the things they have to deal with. That's really fun. Is that the delay to Earth gets longer and longer as they're doing their elliptical orbit. Anyway, really great show. It's really always intriguing to me because there are a lot of things we don't think of when we think of these long-term space missions, like those communications. Apparently NASA is committed. They are working and moving forward, is assuming that we're going to go to Mars.
Wow.
So to quote Steve Kerner, deputy director of Johnson Space Center, he said most of the crew's experimentation focused on nutrition and how that affected their performance. The direct quote was that the work was crucial science as we prepare to send people onto the red planet. They've been separated from their families, placed on a carefully prescribed meal plan, and undergone a lot of observation. Mars is our goal, he said.
Huh. Fascinating. Well, I hope they reach the goal.
No salacious stories, no big advancements to report, just that they completed it. There's no way this could have failed because the idea is they're simulating it to learn.
They're just collecting data.
So there wasn't any chance of failing.
Better to learn here on Earth than to have to try to figure it out when you get up there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. As I said at my new job to the owner, I said, where's the first aid kit? And he said, is anybody hurt? And I said, no, but when they do get hurt, I want to know what the first aid kit is.
Because it's going to happen.
Because it's going to happen. I've never... Anyway. The science officer of the mission said she'd been asked many times why there is a fixation on Mars. And she said, why go on to Mars? Because it's possible. Because space can unite and bring out the best of us. Because it's one defining step that Earthlings will take to light the way into the next centuries. And that resonated with me. And part of the philosophy of this show is like, we need to be having a future pointed towards exploration, abundance, and benefit for all.
Absolutely.
Amen.
All right, and I know your ears perked up earlier, Amber, when I mentioned ants performing surgery.
So we've got robots and now ants? What the heck?
Yes, that is right. So a team of scientists noted that there was an African ant species that would treat infected wounds on their nestmates with an antimicrobial substance that they produced in their glands. But Florida carpenter ants do not have those glands at all. So they said, like any good scientist, well, how did they deal with this kind of stuff?
Okay.
Right? So they took Florida carpenter ants and they looked at two types of leg wounds, lacerations on the thigh and... Mm. Lacerations lower down on the tibia, on the lower leg of the ant.
Okay.
And they found and observed that the ants treated their nest members' femur thigh injuries by cleaning the wound with their mouths before amputating the leg by repeatedly biting it.
What?
Yikes, that sounds pleasant.
While wounds lower on the leg and the tibia were only cleaned with their mouths.
Huh. That really is fascinating.
They're performing triage and then surgery.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, they are. And they were able to do micro CT scans and collect the data to show that the surgeries resulted in a survival of the ant patients going from less than 40% to 90 to 95%.
Wow.
Look at that. Medical expertise.
Maybe we do want them as our doctors.
Yeah, right? The surgery dramatically increased the survival rate. And the survival rates for the lower leg tibia injuries improved from 15% to 75% after the cleaning.
Wow.
Okay, here's the grisly part. An amputation takes the ants at least 40 minutes to complete.
Ooh.
40 minutes. Ron, I got to gnaw your leg off, buddy. This is going to take a minute. Hold on.
Yeah, for precisely 40 minutes.
Suck it up, man. You got
right
this.
Right down on this leather strap.
So they speculated that the damage to the blood pumping muscles in the upper leg and the femur caused the blood circulation to slow, meaning that the bacteria-laden blood would take longer to enter the body, giving the ants enough time to amputate it. But in the tibia, where there's no muscle tissue, the infections can spread quickly. So they would just focus on cleaning it. That's the speculation, obviously, because we haven't talked to the ants to see.
Yet.
Somebody should interview them. That sounds like a fascinating human interest story.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, it would be an insect interest story.
Oh, yeah.
To quote one of the researchers, the ants are able to diagnose a wound, see if it's infected or sterile, and treat it accordingly over long periods of time by other individuals. The only medical system that can rival that would be the human.
Wow. That actually is really fascinating.
Yeah. I now, if I see a trail of ants, I kind of want to get a magnifying glass and be like, are anybody missing a leg?
Any surgery going on?
Right. Instead of burning you with that magnifying glass, I want to study you now. How the times have changed.
That's a sign you've matured, Ron.
Quick, show her a few signs you haven't matured.
Lest she get the wrong idea.
Right. And to round out science news, Alaska's top heavy glaciers are getting closer and closer to an irreversible tipping point.
I
know everybody's so inundated with bad climate news, but that's just where we're at, and not talking about it doesn't help us out of this problem. So a new research coming out of Alaska. They started in 2022 skiing around the White Plateau of ice field up in the top heavy glaciers. Excuse me. There's a plateau that where the glaciers interconnect, and they can ski out and they can go and collect data from all these different glacier mountain things in Alaska. And what they're seeing is what they're calling a climate feedback loop. As temperatures rise, less and less snow remains through the summer. Mm. And in turn leads to more ice being exposed to the sun, which means more ice melts, which means less snow.
Right. That's a pretty bad cycle.
Yeah. We need the snow to sit on top of the ice to keep the ice from melting. That's the way it's been working.
Right.
And that, so less snow means less ice, and less ice means less snow. Oh, no. We're getting close to a threshold where even if warming were to completely stop, we would lose those glaciers.
Wow. That's significant.
Yes. All the data's out there in the study and how they got their figures. They had, the satellite records only go back so far. They're piecing together old timey photos of Alaska, like making like this jigsaw puzzle of the glaciers from years and years ago.
Repeat photography,
They had to, if they want to go back more than 250 years, they map the ridges of what are called moraines, large piles of debris that get deposited at the what they call the snout of the glacier, where the glaciers have pushed into the bedrock.
Yep, that leading edge.
Okay. Yeah, because the glacier is so cold and solid, it's digging into the rock and it creates like a pile of debris, and they're able to measure that. Get information about the glaciers in the mountains. Really, really fascinating stuff. But sadly, they've showed that it's, like I said, the cycle is only increasing, and we've almost hit a tipping point. And that's not just in Alaska. That's Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets as well.
Any of them.
Siberia.
The thinning rates of these glaciers worldwide has doubled over the past two decades.
Oh, yeah.
So what is the potential impact of losing our glaciers? Like, what is that going to do to our environment?
It's going to change the water cycle, the hydrology.
Mm-hmm. All those water, which is already right? one of our scarcest resources. I
mean, all of those mountain springs that flow every year are going to dry up, that depend on the melt from those glaciers at the and a predicted volume that goes down, and
there you go.
So
water table drops.
Sea level rises right away. So we're going to lose a lot of coastal cities. Florida's already sinking pretty low. There's something called
let's not get into politics.
Yeah. Hey-o. There's something called the albedo effect, where glaciers and ice sheets reflect a lot of solar radiation back into space. But if they're not there to reflect it, we're going to absorb even more heat. So we're going to...
Oh, no!
So contributes to greenhouse effect, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So instead of 119, it'll be 129?
Right.
Easy.
Which makes most of the world unlivable for humans.
You think?
Yay!
We would lose, of course, any of the species that live in the glacial environments.
It's a huge deal.
Absolutely. And things like England isn't frigid like, you know, its Scandinavian neighbors, because it's got that Gulf Stream.
Wait till that stops.
Yeah, right. And there's also in the permafrost of the glaciers, there's a lot of greenhouse gases like methane, CO2 that are going to get released. It's
not a good thing.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. But for now, what can you and I do about it? Vote.
Exactly.
That's what we can do. Vote for politicians and parties that follow science. That's the only thing. Science and evidence-based reasoning and thinking.
Please. Gotta
follow the evidence. All right. And speaking of following the evidence, let's talk about some bullshit and snake oil.
Oh, yeah. Snake oil. On sale for me. Nothing but snake oil, and it ain't free.
Okay, I, as a public service, need to just let everybody know that the police will not come for you through a text or a phone call. Well, they might call you, like a detective might call you to ask for information, but they're more likely to call you to set up a time to come in and talk to them, not do it over the phone. And they're certainly not going to FaceTime you. Okay?
No way.
What? They're not?
No, they're not. But people believe and feel, obviously, many, many people feel like they would.
Well, yeah. Excuse me. Why wouldn't they? We live in such a tech-forward society, right?
Right. Well, this today's story comes to us out of England, a very England-centric episode. A British Chinese woman told the BBC about recently handing over her life savings to con men who wore uniforms on a FaceTime video call and even gave her a tour of their police station.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
As part of convincing her of the ruse.
Wow.
Yep. Now, she's a British citizen. Like, she has citizenship in Britain, right? But she's dual citizenship. So they contacted her and threatened her with extradition to China if she didn't pay the bail money.
Oh crap!
Right, and she paid it. Chinese embassies around the world have had to start issuing warnings about these police impersonation scams, and the FBI has backed them up on a few of these cases. One old lady in L.A. reportedly handed over $3 million to stop her extradition.
Wow!
Yeah, yeah.
That's awful.
So get this. It starts so small. She gets a call from somebody claiming to be a Chinese customs officer. And they said, hey, we just intercepted a package of contraband sent in your name. And she said, it wasn't me. And they said, oh, okay, no problem. We think somebody stole your identity. We need you to file a police report.
Okay.
So they transfer her to somebody else.
Oh, man.
And a video call, who says he's a policeman in Shenzhen, China, named Officer Fang. And, oh, no, sorry, that was on a voice call. And then she was like, I need some proof, right? She's skeptical. And so he said, let's do FaceTime. And they switch over to video call, and she sees a guy in a uniform. He's got an ID badge with his own face on it, you know.
Wow.
And then like he gets up and he's like, look, we're in a police station, and he walks around and gives her and like shows the video. There's several other uniformed officers at desks. There's like the logo on the wall. And at this point,
they went the full nine yards.
And at this point, she goes, all her suspicions left her, and she apologized to them and was like, I'm sorry, you know, you got to be careful. And they're like, yeah, no, you do. You're right. You gotta be careful.
Oh, wow.
While they're talking in the background, somebody, says Officer Fang has a call about her, the woman he's talking to. So he says, hold on. I got to take this real quick.
Oh, shit.
And then he puts her on hold, comes back, and he goes, all right, hey, we're not interested in that illegal parcel anymore. You are now a prime suspect in a very large financial fraud.
Oh, damn. Yeah.
I just got the data. They just told me. And she's like, what are you talking about? That's nonsense, right? She's an accountant. And he's like, yeah, nobody says they're guilty. It's the evidence that counts. And we got some strong evidence on you. They showed her a bank statement for a ton of money in her name and told her, like, hey, if you're really innocent, you gotta help us catch these people.
Right.
So they make her sign a confidentiality agreement. Don't tell anybody. You'll get extra prison time if you break this confidentiality agreement.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. If you tell anybody you're being interviewed by the Chinese police, your life is in danger.
Damn.
I need you to download this app on your phone so we can monitor all of your communications.
Fuck.
And listen to what you're doing.
Insidious.
It's not even like on the phone, but like just if her phone's in the room.
That's scary shit.
What the phone is hearing. So like, yeah, her life starts to spiral. Like she stops sleeping. They ordered her to write a detailed report of every aspect of her life.
Poor lady.
They contact her again, telling her they got a bunch of suspects in custody, and they had a bunch of written statements where everybody's accusing her, naming her as the boss in their fraud scheme.
Mm.
They had a video of a prisoner. Confessing to everything and naming her as the boss that he sent her, and he was like, we know it's you.
This is epic level scam. Holy cow.
Some evil shit.
Yeah, this is next level shit, right? Right? And even though she's a British citizen, they've convinced her that they're going to extradite her to China. You got 24 hours. Pack your bags. The police are going to come take you to the airport.
Whoa.
Unless you send us this bail. So she took her 29,000 British pounds that she was saved up to help her daughter buy her first home.
Oh, man.
And transferred it to him.
Oh,
now, during this 2 weeks that this went on, she crashed her car twice, falling asleep at the wheel.
Wow, the stress she must have been under.
Yeah.
It's unimaginable. Yeah.
And she felt like if she went back to China, she was never going to get back to Britain.
Well,
so
yeah.
Yeah. After they took that money, they contacted her a few days later saying they needed $250,000 now. She went to a friend and asked the friend to borrow the money.
Mm.
That friend is the one that called up her daughter and was like, do you know what's happening with your mom?
Yeah, wait a second here. Something's up.
Well, thank God she finally reached out to someone. Who knows how much more they would have gotten.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they, I mean, they already bled her dry. The daughter did convince her, like, Mom, this is a scam. We need to go to the real police.
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, the bank did refund her money.
Wow. That's very fortunate.
That's substantial.
That is not the common
and a little
case.
Surprising in this day and age.
Extremely. Yeah.
Please, if you are listening, the authorities are not going to arrest you over the phone.
Nope.
Sorry,
especially authorities from another country.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Police impersonation scams are on the rise, and they are very confident it is organized crime in Asia pulling this off.
Yeah.
Of they target Chinese individuals, students who can't pay. They've been known to convince them to, like, take photos of themselves tied up with fake blood and stuff to send to people who can't afford to pay. Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. And of course, with AI, it's getting even easier to fake things on the phone.
Yep.
So until they can hack your eyeballs.
Just give them time.
I was going to say, I'm going to take them long. I'll probably send the ants in.
Send in the ants. All right. Let's move along. Let's play some fact checking time. I think it's about time.
I think so. Let's do this.
Here we go. What do you know? It's fact checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the quiz that all the kids call fact checking time.
All right.
Right, all right, all right.
That's right.
All right, McConaughey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fact Checking Time, the new show quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something the media has actually deemed worthy of a true fact check. We are here in the Half Cocktails Lounge with some amazing guests today. We've got Ron, the geologist apologist, in the hot seat.
Boom.
Ron, you ready to play today?
I hope so.
You're playing for Poncho Cat, the co-host of the Half Cocktails New Shorts, and whether you win or lose decides if he gets wet or dry food for dinner.
Ooh, I'll do my best, Poncho.
Yeah, sadly, last week, no pressure, but last week I lost.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm going to present to you a series of events and stories that were in the news or on social media or the internet in some fashion, but only one of them was fact-checked by a media outlet. Could be an article, could be a post, could be an interview quote, could be anything. You're going to have 1 minute to ask me questions for each round. Ron, are you ready to begin?
Let's do it.
1 minute on the clock. Either reusable water bottles have up to 40,000 times more bacteria than a toilet bowl, or babies under 6 months old should not drink water.
Okay. Question. Water bottle, 40,000 more than toilet water. What sort of a source is that? What type of media?
A study by Water Filter Guru, a company specializing in water quality control in the USA.
Okay. I am going to say that the baby under 6 months was fact-checked.
That is correct.
Yay! Mm-hmm.
That is correct. And it is true. Babies under 6 months old should not drink water.
Nope, they don't need it.
Also, I didn't know this. Their stomachs are so tiny. We're talking 5 to 50 milliliters. My stomach is 1,000 to 1,500 millimeters. So it's quite like a sip of water to us fills the entire stomach of the baby.
Right. And they need to be filled with caloric substances.
Desperately.
Like, breast milk and formula.
Diuretics.
Water. They get plenty of water from their formula or breast milk.
And according to an article on BBC News Brazil, written in pidgin, so I had to translate it, Yeah, pigeon's a fun language. I wish I knew it. The amount of colony-forming bacteria units on a single reusable water bottle can get up to 40,000 times more bacteria than a toilet bowl.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yummy.
Scrub out some water bottles. Excuse me, I'll be right back.
Dip my water bottles in bleach.
Yeah. Your kitchen sink actually ends up with less 20 million colony forming units on the water bottle. Can of pet food has 1.4 million. Your computer mouse has 4 million. Your kitchen sink has 11 million. The average toilet seat. Oh, sorry. Apologies. Average toilet seat has only 515.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah. So toilet seats are pretty clean compared to a water bottle.
I got a lot of scrubbing I got to do.
You can eat dinner off that toilet bowl.
All right, next round.
Well, depends on whose toilet bowl. I've seen a few I would not eat off of.
Not a public toilet bowl either. Tokyo's race for governor has more influencers running than politicians. Or Japan has a program offering a cash incentive for anyone fathering a baby of African descent.
I volunteer as tribute.
Let's see.
That's interesting.
That is very interesting.
Why would
I am going to go with the more sensational article as being the fact check one, being the cash incentive for having the African child.
That is correct.
Yes. Whoa. Poncho's already got wet food.
Yay, Poncho. See, we should just have Ron in the hot seat every week.
That is a very made up and racist thing being shared online.
Yeah.
That would never happen. The internet is not for that.
Yeah, hold on. There we go.
That is, and so what was the rationale behind that story? Like, what were
it was a social media video of a woman that saying that the governments of Japan and South Korea are trying to incentivize men to have children, you know, black men, just that just that Japan wants more black in South Korea, want more black people in their genetic gene pool.
Okay.
Well, I know they're having like a demographic crisis, but that's going a little far.
Yeah. The low birth rate, 75 grand per baby was the claim. Hmm.
Wow.
It could have just been some thirsty Asians trying to get some black men to come over. To come. Yeah. There you go.
Mm-hmm. I could get him to come. Wait.
Ooh. Ah, I can get you get through this, Dan. You can get through this. Tokyo is electing a new governor. And there's like 80 people running, and so many celebrities and like influencers are just trying to raise their own profile.
It's idiocracy. We're there.
Yeah, a lot of residents are displeased.
There's a lot of social media influencers that I would vote for president over the choices.
Mr. Beast for president.
Right?
56 candidates. 56 candidates for governor.
You know, and I think that that's a good thing. You get more variety, you have more choices, better chances, right?
Right? Yeah, why not?
Sure.
This two-party system doesn't work.
Okay. Let's have a 5,000-party system. That'll be easier.
You know, science has shown us that ranked choice voting and it would open us up to multi-parties. We would destroy the two-party stranglehold.
That would be the way to go.
Nice.
It's science. You gotta love it. It just gets better and better with age, like a fine wine.
Well, first you gotta believe it.
Right.
All right. Final round, Ron. Are you ready?
I am ready. The pressure is off. Poncho's already got food, so.
So yeah. Here we go. No pressure. This is bonus round. Either Jeffrey Epstein's brother quoted him as saying in 2016. if I said what I know about both candidates for president, they'd have to cancel the election. Or Kevin Spacey said in an interview that he flew on a Jeffrey Epstein's private jet with Epstein, a bunch of young girls, and a bunch of Clinton Foundation members.
Oh,
all right.
What
are the sources for both of these stories?
Kevin Spacey's story was shared on Reddit, Facebook, TikTok, on X. It was a clip of him speaking to Pierce Morgan.
Okay.
And the Epstein's brother gave an interview to the New York Post.
Both of these are, you know, exceptionally grand sources of true journalism.
Right.
The Post and Pierce. Wow. Okay. I am going to go with the Spacey piece being the one that was fact checked.
Wow. 3 for 3, Ron. Well done.
Boom.
Well
done. Well Ron done. Is good at this game.
So, yes, Kevin Spacey, just this year in June, had an interview on Pierce Morgan Uncensored, where he talked about being on that flight with a bunch of young girls and a bunch of Clinton Foundation members.
Wow.
Did not specifically say either Clinton was on the plane, just members of their charity. He said, despite being on the plane, he didn't have a big relationship with them, which tracks. Sexual assault tracks, but, you know, he was Spacey's into guys. I don't think Epstein would have wanted to have an orgy with him.
No, I don't think he delved in that.
And Mark Epstein did say that to the New York Post. That's what his brother told him in 2016. It is notable, and I brought it up because the Epstein files are being unredacted. And it does seem a current presidential candidate spent a lot of time with Jeffrey Epstein and is referenced.
Yes, indeed.
No, I don't believe it.
If there is a Wikipedia page just for the sexual assault allegations against Donald Trump. It is worth going in and looking through.
It's astounding.
Absolutely is. It's ridiculous.
When we talk about like ancient aliens and like aliens built the pyramids, and we're like, no, we can critical think our way into knowing we built the pyramids. There's a lot of correlating data of simple pyramids. The older you get, the more simple they are. The materials used were like had a steady progression of better and better materials and tools, right? You look at these allegations, what would you expect to find if this man was a serial predator? Allegations going back 45 years.
Yeah.
Corroboration between men that also were a part of it.
Consistent details.
You would see a lot of personal statements that correlate.
Mm-hmm.
We have all of those.
Mm-hmm.
We have all of those. Men have come forward and said, I was at an underage orgy sex party with Donald Trump. Several of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Women, including his wife in the 80s, have accused him of rape.
Yep.
All the way back 45 years. His own statements on Howard Stern talking about how great it was to own the Miss Teen Universe pageant because he could go backstage and see all the teens naked because he owned the place. Grab them by the pussy. They do whatever you want when you're rich. His own statements correlate and corroborate.
When he says it, believe it.
He says this shit. I don't understand why people don't see it, right? It comes out of his mouth.
And somehow the party of Pizzagate is voting for an actual pedophile. We have data that supports this man is a pedophile. And they're voting for him. It makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me. That's going to do it for fact checking time. Join us next week where either I will sing to the moon or get mooned by a singer. Now let's move on. Let's talk about some feel good news.
Ooh, always good. Please.
A goal for a sip. Maybe even a hit. And join us for join us for
a study titled Gratitude and Mortality Among Older U.S. Female Nurses.
Okay, interesting.
Right. So what they did was they wanted to explore any association between gratitude and mortality. They took 49,275 older female registered nurses. They plucked all this data from the Nurses' Health Study. This was all self-collected. This was all self-reported questionnaires and medical records between 2016 and 2019.
Okay.
They used a six-item gratitude questionnaire to measure the tendency to experience the grateful effect. They used the National Death Index and state statistical records to identify deaths. They got those deaths, causes of death confirmed by physicians through reviewing death certificates and medical records. So what did they find? They found higher levels of gratitude were associated with a lower hazard of all-cause mortality, specifically a 9% lower chance of dying.
Wow.
The more grateful you are. Like, so the top grateful people died, at 9% lower rate than the people not feeling any gratitude in their lives.
Wow, that's significant. Yeah,
I can see that, though. Like, that makes sense to me, because everything we think and feel affects our body and the way our body reacts to situations and just daily life. So when we have a more positive mindset, all the cells in our body are working more efficiently. Our energy is better.
We know stress is a hormone that gets released in your system. Like, and that stress really ages and messes with you.
It does.
So it would follow that other states of mind would create a much more beneficial state of being for your body.
Yeah.
Matt, correct. That's cool. Very cool.
That's awesome.
Feel good indeed. And exactly, feel good.
The authors did note further studies with more samples are going to need to confirm these results, right? Like, this is something that needs to continue to be explored. And it's not hard to get started with gratitude if you're not into that in your life already. The simple techniques such as gratitude journaling, or something called the Three Good Things exercise, and which I believe is like, what are three good things that happened to you today that you can be grateful for? You don't even have to write them down. You just think about them.
Yeah, I've seen it referred to as instead of identifying your triggers, identify your glimmers. What are the little things that brought you joy in the day?
Little things that make you happy. Yep.
Yeah. I like that, because for several years in our culture, I felt like people were using their most vulnerable parts of themselves as like a blunt instrument on other people.
Yeah. It's a reverse kind of virtue signaling.
Yes. And I'm like, what happened? Like, I get it. You're neurodivergent. I'm neurodivergent. But I don't want to think about that all the time. I want to think about what I'm good at.
Right. It's kind of like a pendulum. The pendulum was so far on the other side of, denying our emotional states and how emotions affect us. And it swung all the way to the other side, where we're so immersed in emotion now that we kind of have lost that middle ground. We need to kind of center it back out again.
Yeah.
It's not healthy to be too far to either side.
Well, you know what is healthy? Gratitude. And I'm very grateful, Ron and Amber, that you both joined us in the lounge today. It's been really, really great time. But
me too.
We do have to wrap things up. And before we go, I got to thank Pizza the Hut, who tragically, after getting locked inside his own car, has eaten himself to death. Looks like we don't have any time left for the talking squirrel. You won't believe its favorite phrase. Sorry, folks. That's on me.
Well, the fact that you're talking to squirrels leaves me a little bit concerned.
No, it's not my... The squirrel's talking to me, Amber. Get it straight.
Just me. I am the squirrel prophet.
Me prophet of someone, I guess.
I got to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and the Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. Any final words, thoughts before we go? Ron?
Yeah. May your houses slay their enemies. Kapla.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Crush them. Amber, any final thoughts, words, goodbyes?
Yes, diversify the gene pool.
There you go. Yeah, spread it around. All right, have a wonderful day, folks. If you had a good time with us, you know what to do. Tell someone that needs us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com, over on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. If you're in a giving mood, you can find us over on Patreon. We'll have all those links in the episode description. Please check out halfcocktails.com/shop. You're going to find a lot of great branded merchandise there. I'm sure you'll love. But for now, thanks for stopping by. Go out. Be well.
Yeah. Have a good one.
See ya.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. Oh, we're just leaving you half-cocked. We had a good time talking today. But even best times, eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration. Oh, we're just leaving half-cocked.